Brihad Bhagavat Tamrita. Who's, that's what we're going to be discussing this evening. Did you know that? Huh? You heard. But I see the books haven't been opened yet. Ah, the first one you opened. Okay. See, yesterday, in the past week, you had an immersion in Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, morning, the Govardhan Lila, evening, Brahma Vimohan Lila. We were in Vrindavan for the whole week. And then we pretty much finished the Brahma Vimohan Lila pastime, just kind of moved on to the next sequel within the same chapter 14. So the thought was, during this visit, we'll go to Vaikuntha, and then Ayodhya, and then to Dwarka, and then to Mathura and Vrindavan. Okay. Yesterday evening, we read from Canto 3, Chapter 15, that's the description of the four Kumaras going to Vaikuntha, and they got as far as the gates of Vaikuntha. And now we're going to go in the gates of Vaikuntha with Gopakumar. So a little background on Brihat Bhagavatamrita. It's a very elevated literature. In one sense, it's a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. And a more technical sense, it's a supplement, or the Sanskrit word is kila, to Jaimini Rishi's Mahabharata. Here's how it opens, the part one that you're reading. In addition to Vyasadeva's Mahabharata, there's other Mahabharatas. Just like, other than Valmiki Ramayana, there's other Ramayanas. And we find that in Srimad Bhagavatam itself, where Sukadeva Goswami says, I'm going to speak about the pastimes of Ram, but only from the authorized versions, plural. Meaning there were unauthorized versions as well as authorized versions. And that was a long time ago, 5,000 years ago. So similarly, different Mahabharatas, which I was a little surprised when I came to know. But the Mahabharata that Jaimini Rishi had recited to Maharaj Parikshit. So Maharaj Parikshit is the son of who? Maharaj Parikshit is the son of Abhimanyu. And Abhimanyu was the son of Arjuna. And the other Pandavas. So he's the grandson, Maharaj Parikshit. And his son was Janamejaya. So Janamejaya wanted to hear about his ancestors. So he was hearing from Jaimini Rishi. And after hearing Mahabharata from Jaimini Rishi, he went, wow, that was really good. I've heard many Mahabharata katas before, but nothing so sweet as this. Is there any companion literature or corollary literature, kila, that's connected with your Mahabharata? And he said, sure, I'll explain it to you. And that's part one. And part one begins with, in the month of Magh, Narada Muni, along with a number of other sages, are on the bank of the Dashashvamedha Ghat. Interestingly, the same place where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Sanatan Goswami, who is the author. And they're following certain procedures found within the Vedas for that month of Magh to observe some religious rituals. And when one does those rituals in that place during that month, there is all auspiciousness that goes to those performers. So they start, as sages will do, they started considering how fortunate they felt themselves to be in this place at this time, doing this activity, and it led them to then consider who is the greatest recipient of the mercy of the Lord. That was the topic. That's a nice topic. And while they were having this elevated discussion, on the bank of the Dashashvamedha Ghat came one Brahmana with a whole retinue of followers, and by the side of the Ghat he established a little altar where he was doing his puja for his Shalagram Shila. And it was with such opulence and such splendor that Narada just jumped up and approached the Brahmin and said, "Surely you're the greatest recipient of the mercy of the Lord," and gave his reasons why he was saying like that. And the Brahmana said, "No, no, no. I'm just very insignificant. You're honoring my worship this way, that way. But if you really want to see someone who's the recipient of the Lord's mercy, there's this special king and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and he's really the..." So Narada goes to see the king, and the king is everything that the Brahmana said, and he said, "You're the greatest recipient." "No, no, 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 no. I'm just very small, and..." But the greatest recipient, he keeps going from place to place to place. And the humility of the Vaishnava is not degrading another, they're just in their mood of humility saying what their disqualification is, in contrast with what Narada is seeing and others were saying that their qualification is. So like this, he goes from place to place to place to place to place to place, and he finally ends up in Dwarka. And the conclusion of that whole part one is great. Krishna discloses to the residents of Dwarka, particularly his queens, the most elevated, exalted nature of the residents of Vrindavan and how he's attached to them and they're attached to him, and so they're the greatest. That's Narada's conclusion. They're the greatest recipients of the mercy of the Lord. And that ends part one with lots of, you know, subject matter in between. And part two begins with Sanatana Goswami saying, that was just a preamble, and now we're ready for Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and starts narrating Brihad Bhagavat. So it's giving a backdrop of spiritual hierarchy, and then starts again with Gopu Kumar. So the scene opens in Vrindavan, and there's a little boy whose occupation is taking care of cows. And so his name is Gopa Kumar, young cowherd boy. And he loves cows, and he's with his friends, and they're herding cows. And the scene opens and continues. So there's a stage where he gets, in Vrindavan, from his spiritual master, he receives mantra, Gopal mantra, same mantra we receive in ISKCON, one of the Gayatri mantras. And he, through the chanting of his mantra, his guru said, "This will bestow upon you all desirable things." So his initial desire is a little mixed. So he has mixed experiences here and there and there and there, and eventually makes his way to Vaikuntha. So when he goes to Vaikuntha, he doesn't just go to the gates like the four Kumaras did, but he enters Vaikuntha. So would you like to go to Vaikuntha with Gopal Kumar? We'll go back a little bit. This is he's in Mathura. There I heard the Bhagavatam and other scriptures from the local Brahmanas. After rightly understanding the meaning of devotional service in its nine forms, I came to this forest. So Gopal Kumar is speaking to a Brahmana, an elder Brahmana, and Gopal Kumar's little boy. And the Brahmana was bewildered and had some regard for Gopal Kumar and started asking him questions. And Gopal Kumar started narrating, said, normally, one doesn't speak about oneself, but the questions you've asked, I can't think of a better way to answer than by using the example of what I have experienced. So he starts describing his experience. As soon as I arrived in this forest, I met again my divine spiritual master. He appeared splendid, just as before, and when he saw me lying prostrate before him, he joyfully embraced me and offered me his blessings. Thus my all-knowing master showed me his extreme mercy. Receiving his grace, which revealed to me the most confidential secrets, I followed his instructions by practicing bhakti yoga without interruption. Such a flood of pure love of God so quickly awakened within me that I lost control of myself. I was unable to do anything but chant the Lord's glories. Oh, Sri Krishna, Gopal, Hari Mukunda, Govinda, oh, Nanda, Kishore, Krishna, oh, darling son of Yashoda, please show me your favor. Oh, life of the divine cowherd girls, oh, Lord of Radhika. Thus I called out to Krishna and sang his glories in various ways. At one moment, I danced exuberantly. At another, sobbed out loud like a madman. I wandered here and there according to my whims, forgetting my own body and everything else. Once, I thought I saw the Lord of my life standing before me, and I ran to take hold of him. Overwhelmed by love, I fainted and fell to the ground. At that moment, the associates of the Lord arrived in an airplane to take me to Vaikuntha. They at once put me on that plane and carried me away. And when I opened my eyes, I saw that everything was different. Shocked, I returned to full consciousness and saw them beside me, the same benefactors I had met before. The plane upon which they rode was wonderful, incomparable, indescribably beautiful, excelling in brilliance the most powerful luminaries. As they reverently offered obeisances, those associates of the Lord embraced me and reassured me again and again, putting forward hundreds of arguments. They wished to give me a bodily form like theirs, Sarupya Mukti. But I refused their offer. And instead, by their influence, my own body, born in Govardhan, assumed qualities and beauty like theirs. In their company, I travel along the path to Vaikuntha, a path inconceivable, supremely blissful, and distinct from everything in this world. My eyes fell upon all those worlds, cosmic regions, and coverings of the universe I had visited before, and I felt ashamed. Because previously he had gone through different celestial regions and then through the coverings of the universe, and that's really an amazing description. The residents and presiding rulers of these places were honoring me, faces upraised, palms joined above their heads. They vigorously cast flowers, parched rice, and other auspicious offerings upwards towards me, praised by cries of victory and offering obeisances at every step. I moved on, and before my eyes I saw the abode of liberation, and how trifling it was. That's the Brahmajyoti. And traveling upward from there, I came to the world of Lord Shiva. There I bowed down to Lord Shiva and Uma with great pleasure, and he made me feel blissful with a flood of gracious words filled with love and respect. And then I went on to that place whose garland of glories cannot be touched by words or by mind, by Kunta. So now, the picture that we have in Brihat Bhagavatamrita is more detail than we find elsewhere. So, we know from Brahma Samhita, Goloka namni nijadamni talecha tasya devi mahesho haridama suteshu tesho. So the hierarchy is devidam, maheshdam, haridam, golokadam. So he's gone through the layers, gone through cosmic regions, as it says, various planets and higher realms within the cosmos, its earlier sections. And then he's gone through the layers of the universe. Those were described in detail in previous section. Now he's just like zoom, just quickly going through them again. And then above the layers of the universe, there's the Brahmajyoti. And that previous chapter described that experience. And then there's Shiva Loka. Now I don't want to spend too much time because there's not even a purport for this verse, but just to keep the picture consistent. Lord Shiva has multiple abodes, like seven of them. And Shiva Loka is one. Shiva Loka is in the spiritual, is in the, within the Brahmajyoti. I mean, most people identify when they think of Lord Shiva, it's Mount Kailash. Mount Kailash is a place in the upper regions of this universe. So he has a place there. In the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, he has a place in Bhumandala. And he has a place in the lower regions where the cosmic annihilation takes place, where the Rudras stay, and there's a particular name for that place. So, and then the Sadashiva, who is the same as Vishnu, but is a name of a feature of Lord Shiva. So he has multiple functions. So he's visiting the Shiva local place. So you look closely at those posters that are depictions of the material and spiritual world. Look closely and you'll see Shiva in the region beyond the universe. That's the Shivaloka that's being spoken of here. And just not to get confused, but he has multiple residences because of multiple functions. So he's come to the first gate of Vaikuntha. Now the four Kumaras went through the first six quickly, and he got stopped at the seventh. He's at the first gate. The associate of the Lord told me, please wait here for a moment outside. We should take permission from our Lord before bringing you into his city. Stay calm. And with your eyes illumined by devotion for the Lord, count the waves of the vast ocean of wonders that flow here one after another, wonders you have never seen or heard of before. Sri Gopakumar said, so we're getting a picture of his experience of Vaikuntha. They went in, and I stood outside in the pavilion of the entrance gate. I then beheld someone coming and entering that great city. He rode on a transcendental vehicle, endowed with the opulence of hundreds of universes. Music and other entertainment filled him with delight. He resembled the Supreme Lord in luster and beauty. I thought, he was Sri Hari, and I cried out again and again, O Lord, protect me, and bowed down to him. But he covered both his ears and gestured for me to stop. I'm a servant, he told me. I'm a servant of the servants. And he moved on into the city. A short while later, another person came by, splendid, with even more power and opulence. I looked at him and thought, surely this must be the Lord of the universe. He must have gone somewhere as a pastime and now is entering his own abode. When the person saw me bowing with gestures of reverence and offering him prayers as I honored the one before, he affectionately spoke to me in the same way and entered the city. Many others came, some alone, others in pairs, and yet others in large groups, and all of them, each more splendid than the last, entered the city of the Lord. Seeing them as they passed by, I was immersed as before in an ocean of Again and again I bowed down and offered prayers, and each time, again, they stopped me with nectarian affectionate words. Some of them carried various items for performing their service. And others simply hurried forward intoxicated by the tastes of the nectar of devotion. All had their minds and senses busily absorbed, each in his own service, and they were all decorated with a myriad of pleasures from ecstatic worship of the Lord, offering obeisances, reciting prayers, and doing all sorts of wonderful things. Those devotees, their every limb lending grace to their ornaments, looked fit to appear before their worshipable Lord. They extolled the wonder of the great pastimes of the Lord, the husband of Lakshmi, as if his pastimes were those of some all-victorious king, and they were eager to see the Lord's lotus feet. Some were with their families, some with an array of things, and others had left their families and things outside. Some had absorbed all that they had into themselves, and like beggars without possessions, they came alone, immersed in the moods of devotional meditation. Some assumed different forms at different times, all with all kinds of ornaments, bodily features, and ways of acting, all exceedingly attractive. Some appeared as humans, some as monkeys, demigods, demons, or sages, and some bore the signs of persons initiated into the behavior of the Varnashram system. Some looked like Indra, Chandra, or other demigods. Some had three eyes, some had four heads, or four arms, or eight, or 1,000 faces. And what's described in the commentary is, these are not demigods, they're the prototypes from which demigods expand or are manifest. If required, in the purport or commentary, if required for service to Narayana, the Vaikunthavasis can assume the exact forms of the ordinary demigods, semicolon, but empowered incarnations and direct expansions of Narayan, such as Anantashesh, the Vaikunthavasis can only emulate to the extent of copying certain of their bodily features. Next text. Later I shall explain to you the reason for this extreme variety of appearances for those who enjoy the modes of devotion to Krishna. Is there anything not beautiful? The residents of Vaikuntha transcend everything material. For persons within the material creation, the manifold glories of those residents and of the Vaikuntha world and its master are beyond analogy and beyond the power of words to describe. Yet he's doing a pretty good job to describe. Nevertheless, my dear Brahmana, you are a resident of the material world and your intelligence is confined because you can only see matter. Therefore I say, it is like this, so that by material examples you might understand various things more easily. May Lord Hari forgive this offense. There's different qualities of a devotee, 26 qualities of a devotee. And of course there's unlimited, but primary qualities. And one of them in Sanskrit is kavi. Kavi can have two meanings. It can mean learned or it can mean poetic. Like Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami or Kavi Karnapur, kavi. It's a title that's given to devotees sometimes. But it's a quality of a devotee. And it's a quality of a devotee to understand things that are very deep and profound, that's kavi, or when you're trying to describe something that's otherworldly, you have to use poetry, or like this, and this is not adequate, but it points the direction of something. Rupa Goswami uses this all the time in his writings, describing, the smile of Krishna or the face of Radharani and so forth and so on. It's indescribable. But something is used to indicate. An example that's commonly given is if you're pointing to somebody where the moon is, but somehow they can't see it. And you say, see that tree right there? And the branch of the tree, right between the branch and the trunk of the tree, right there. So the moon is not in the branch of the tree. But you look at something you can see, and beyond the something you can see gives you an idea of something that's far more distant. So he's speaking like that, and he's trying to help this brahmana, this worldly brahmana, to understand what it's like in Vaikuntha. Though there seem to be hierarchies in Vaikuntha, its residents all enjoy equality among themselves. In this, there is no contradiction. So a little example is, Gopa Kumar is at the gate, and the associates that have brought him there, they have to get permission. So they respect hierarchy. But there's equality while they're respecting hierarchy. That's the ideal Varnashram system, because it was mentioned previously, some have markings of the Varnashram system. Commentary says, the residents of Vaikuntha are equal because all of them can do anything they want. That some of them appear greater than others is not contradictory, because all of these devotees show their natural opulence and power in different degrees by their own free choice. Next text. Absent among them are faults, like envy, and their innate good qualities ever shine forth by the thousands. And there's lots of commentary here saying, showing that spiritual qualities aren't material qualities. They're substance. It's not come and go. It's substance. It's sat. One of the verses we read yesterday evening was Canto 3, Chapter 15, about Vaikuntha. So one of those verses is quoted here. When the king of bees hums in a high pitch, singing the glories of the Lord, there is a temporary lull in the noise of the pigeon and the cuckoo, the crane and the chakravaka, the swan, the parrot, the partridge and the peacock. Such transcendental birds stop their own singing simply to hear the glories of the Lord. And the next verse from the same chapter, 15. Although flowering plants like, gives a long list of names of Sanskrit plants with flowers, although these plants are full of transcendental fragrance, they are still conscious of the austerities performed by Tulsi. For Tulsi is given special preference by the Lord, who garlands himself with Tulsi leaves. So there's equality, but there's also hierarchy, and there's no envy. They're all personal associates of Narayan. Superficially, those residents of Vaikuntha may appear like sense enjoyers of the material realm, but in fact, their feet are worshipped by liberated souls. Those devotees have attained the absolute limit of changelessness. Interesting phrase, huh? Because sat means eternal. So here there's time moves things, and time moving things means there's always changes. One thing that's constant in the material world is constant change. Vikara, the Sanskrit word, transformation, changing, change and change and change. So sat means no change, and these residents of Vaikuntha are the limit of changelessness. So they're not, it's not static, but it's dynamic and still not changing. Yet they playfully show all kinds of transformations while taking part in their Lord's pastimes. And vikara is the same, that word, transformations. Thus, although equals, they manifest individual variety. In that place, everything is so, including the profusion of airplanes. This is Vaikuntha. There isn't competition, higher, lower, friend, enemy. It's just not there. There's distinction, and they manifest distinction, we are told, according to their desire, and so that's fine. But there's no envy, there's no enmity, there's no competition, there's no disruption of the flow of their devotional service and love of Godhead. Sometimes that place appears full of riches like gold and jewels, and sometimes its atmosphere appears chalk white like a thick condensation of moonlight. Now there's a metaphor. Isn't that a nice one? Thick condensation of moonlight. Then it changes to something else. Vaikuntha may be somehow understood only by its own spiritual influence and not otherwise. Indeed, even the mind cannot grasp its form. Except by direct experience, no one can rightly understand Vaikuntha, no more than this can I accurately describe. When one sees the splendors of Vaikuntha, the happiness realized in Brahman at once seems empty and as if from sheer embarrassment on its own, it disappears. Should we go on? Those who are self-satisfied, fulfilled in all desires and free from all material concerns, who renounced everything they know and possess, who have associated with Vaishnavas and have thus acquired the power to discern between the essential and the non-essential, it is they who enter the path of devotional service. When I went to Vaikuntha, that is what I vividly saw. He's going to go meet the Lord. As I watched those persons come and go, I thought, what kind of Lord must be who has such servants? Thus, I thrilled with delight as I waited at the gateway to Vaikuntha. I excitedly stood up and sat down till the associates of the Lord returned rushing back and escorted me inside. The amazing things I saw, more wonderful than wonderful, even the thousand-headed Anantashesha would be unable to describe, even in the lifetime of Brahma. I arrived at several more gates, one after another, and at each one, I was met by similar doorkeepers who allowed me to enter only after announcing my arrival to their immediate superiors, although they're equals. They're respectful. As I entered each gate, I saw the guards offer obeisances to the local superintendent. So I assumed that he was the Lord of the universe, overwhelmed with reverence, just as before I repeatedly bowed down and recited prayers. Finally, the Supreme Lord's compassionate men who were guiding me told me the special signs by which to recognize the Lord. What are those signs to recognize? Kastuba jewel in the Srivatsa, right? They also taught me what prayers to recite and what etiquette to observe. I passed rapidly through many districts, wonderfully splendid, with all kinds of houses and gates, and then I entered the most excellent transcendental neighborhood. There I came to one palace at whose feet many others stood in attendance, a palace district, overflowing in greatness, where excellence seemed to reach its highest limit, radiant like millions of suns and moons that captured my mind and my eyes. Within that palace, I saw before me at a distance the personality of Godhead, Lord of Vaikuntha. He sat at leisure on the best of thrones, a golden throne, shimmering with the glow of many jewels. The cushion on which he sat was of swan-white cotton, fine, attractive, spotlessly clean, and the soft, handsome bolster on which he leaned his left elbow and upper arm appeared like the full moon, cleansed of all its spots. He was the presiding lord of blossoming youth. The brilliant effulgence of his sweet, attractive limbs defeated the splendor of new rain clouds. That effulgence lent further grace to his garlands, cosmetics, and garments already graced by jewelry made of gold bedecked with gems. His four shining arms, long and well-built, enhanced the beauty of his bangles and armlets. Two yellow silk garments dressed his body, and charming earrings set off his rounded cheeks. On his broad chest was the Kastuba gem. On his conch shell neck, a string of pearls. And on his moon-like face was a nectarian smile. His lotus eyes were alive with playful glances. The great compassion he made his beautiful... The great compassion he felt made his beautiful eyebrows dance. Rama, his ideally matching consort, standing by his left side, reverently offered him excellent pan to chew, which he accepted. The color of that pan made his bimba fruit lips even more attractive, and their luster reflected on his teeth. Two rows of spotless kunda flowers. Illumined by the glow of those flowers, his playful smile shone splendidly. His amusing words and gestures stole away the hearts of his devotees. The goddess Dharani, holding in her hand a vessel to catch the remnants of betel nut, constantly worshipped the Lord with messages in sidelong glances, and the Lord's excellent weapons like Sudarshana served him in beautiful personified forms, their identities marked by symbols on their heads. And the commentary says, Dharani or Bhumi is the second goddess of fortune whose expansion is the presiding deity of the earth. Next, servants stood all around him, worshiping him with great respect, their appearance like his, their hands beautified by the transcendental items they held for his service, like slippers and yak tail fans. Shesha Garuda, Vishvaksena, and the other leaders of his many groups of attendants bowed down before him with devotion, stood before him with palms joined above their heads, and praised him in wonderful poetic language. Sri Narada, dancing, and his expert singing and veena playing created such clever entertainment that the Lord and his two consorts, Rama and Dharani, sometimes laughed out loud. To add to the special ecstasy of his devotees whose hearts were fixed only on him, from time to time the Lord extended both his lotus feet as a way of offering himself. In this way, he exhibited his splendor. The fullness of the ecstasy this sight brought on made me forget what the attendants of the Lord had instructed me. I cried out again and again, "Oh, Gopal, my life and soul!" And I ran forward to embrace the Lord. Some discerning attendants who were standing at the Lord's side held me back, and I was heartbroken. I cried out in helpless distress again and again, overcome by my excessive love, and fell unconscious in front of the Lord. With some effort, those attendants lifted me up, and after some time, I regained consciousness. I wiped away with my hands the flood of tears that blocked my sight, and with difficulty, I finally opened my eyes. Then I heard the Lord, that best of merciful persons, tell me in a deep, gentle voice, "Please, come back to your senses. Dear boy, come here quickly." I then felt the highest limit of joy. I danced all around as if seized by madness and stumbled about. With great endeavor, the Lord's servants calmed me down. And at last, I awakened from that trance. The Lord said, listen to this, "Welcome. Welcome, my dear boy. I am fortunate, most fortunate, to meet you here. For so long I've been eager to see you, my dear friend. You have passed many lifetimes without paying any attention to me at all. For so long, hope had me dancing like a fool, thinking, perhaps in this lifetime, or this, or this, or this, he will finally turn his face toward me. But I could find no pretext on which to bring you to my abode, dear brother, and still follow the timeless laws that I myself have created. You showed me no mercy. And as I considered this, I grew impatient, full of anxiety to receive your favor. So I transgressed my eternal code of conduct and arranged for you to take your current birth, dear boy, in that divine district of Govardhan, my most beloved abode. I myself became your guru, known by the name Jayanta." Now before that, he didn't even know his guru's name. But now he knows his name. And he knows that it was the Supreme Lord who came as his guru. So in the purport it says, "Only when the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, grants his unconditional kindness can one take wholehearted refuge in the Lord's lotus feet and cross beyond the ocean of illusion, otherwise impossible to cross." Today, you have at last fulfilled the desire I have harbored for so long. Please, nourish your happiness and mine by staying here forever. Sri Gopakumar said, maddened by drinking the beverage of the Supreme Lord's words so intoxicating, I was unable to offer him praise or to understand or do anything. Just in front of us appeared a number of flute players, dressed as cowherds like me, they were affectionately encouraging me, gained my trust, pulled me into their midst, and urged me to play my flute. In various styles, I played this very dear flute of mine, born on Govardhan Hill, and in this way, I satisfied the ocean of all skillful arts, the reservoir of all mercy, Sri Madhava, along with his associates. When the time came to stop, everyone, on the request of Lakshmi Devi, started to leave. But I didn't want to go. The devotees had to persuade me to let them escort me outside. Though, like everyone else, in Vaikuntha, I was approached by transcendental opulences. That's Sharsti, that's another liberation. I avoided them. I refused to show even the splendors that spontaneously appeared within me. I resided there in the same form I had always had, that of a cowherd boy. In Vaikuntha, all opulences are purely spiritual, full in eternity knowledge and bliss, appearing whenever one desires. They willingly submit themselves to one's control. Thus, there is opulence even in what seems like absence. And when opulence is visible, the devotees still feel as if they possess nothing. That is the special nature of Vaikuntha. In any case, by the strong influence of my previous practices, I continued to pay serious attention to my worship of the Supreme Lord and always happily behave like an insignificant person. In my heart, I then concluded that by the mercy of the Lord, I had now surely gained the ultimate fruit to be acquired from all my prior births and endeavors. Oh, what unimaginable happiness, what an exalted abode, what a wonderful master, and how greatly wonderful his mercy. After some time, by the Lord's kindness, I obtained the intimate personal service of fanning him with a chamara, and I constantly felt the bliss of seeing the Lord as I played for him in my flute, on my flute. So, to be continued tomorrow. Now, do you know of any literature like this? I was sharing yesterday. I'm unaware of anything where it describes the kingdom of God. What to speak of in this kind of detail, but just like even basics. Little sharing, I've shared this many times before. When I was a small boy growing up, I heard about heaven. So I made the mistake of asking my mother and father, what's it like there? What do people do? You know, what's the travel advertisement, the marketing of heaven? They didn't say, we don't know. They didn't make up a story of what they didn't know either. They just patted me on the head and say, oh, isn't that a nice question? And then when guests would come to the home, they'd push me forward and say, go ahead, say it. It's like so embarrassing. Like a monkey or something, you know, do some cartwheels or something. So I asked my Sunday school teacher and I asked the priest and you know, they gave the same response. Isn't that a nice question? And it became very clear they didn't know because they would have told me if they knew. So I stopped asking and got busy with school like young people do. And then sometime later I started asking again. But no, again, no answers until I came across Prabhupada's writings. And it's not only heaven, but a distinction between heaven and the kingdom of God. And I never knew that before. And one comes into being, stays for some time, and goes out of being, and the other is eternal. And what's it like in this place, and what's it like in that place? And we should aspire for the, not the temporary, not the heaven one. But, you know, who understands that? According to Bhagavad Gita, and it's true, that most people think the purpose of Dharma is to achieve piety and attain destination in heaven. There's nothing more than that. Most people, that's what they think. And it's not, it's just this religion, that religion. This is what most people think. That's the theists. So this is, it's a very special subject matter. And it's very attractive. Who would not be attracted from a theist group? But so it's very, very elevated. And something that I heard many times from Prabhupada, it stuck. When you have clearly defined a goal, it's very easy to take steps towards the goal. And the converse is, if you don't have a very clearly identified goal, pretty hard to take steps to get there. So what's the goal of life? I'm too busy being successful to ask that question and find the answer to that question. Successful at what? And what's the goal of what's success mean? We do this with college kids. In programs. What's the standard of success in this world? And who considers themselves in another group? What's considered a failure and who considers themselves a failure? But then, you know, that's just to strike up the conversation of what is really success or what's the goal? Not too many people are thinking about it. Those that are thinking about it, there are lots of different opinions. And it's not transcendental because anything that the mind can think of, transcendence is beyond what the mind can think of. And that's an interesting concept. So how are you supposed to establish a goal that's beyond what the mind can think of? It's by the process of hearing. From the realm of transcendence here. And that's what scripture is, the word of God. And the word of God is of God. It's of that same spiritual transcendental. So hearing those sound vibrations carries one to that place. It reveals the place. And it carries you to that place. So tomorrow we'll be discussing the rest of Gopal Kumar's stay in Vaikuntha. And then from Vaikuntha's visit to Ayodhya. And then after Ayodhya, Dwarka, and then after Dwarka, Vrindavan. That's our journey. It's giving us a picture of, the stops on the train ride. Here's this one, go out. On the platform, look around, go visit a little bit, and get back on the train, go to the next one. The journey of going to Krishna is certainly attractive. Attractive to the mind, attractive to the heart. What was the consciousness of Sanatan Goswami? That's another link. Because he not only wrote this, he wrote the commentary on it after he wrote it. And one can imagine the consciousness he was carrying in order to write it, and as he was writing and after he wrote it, it's something, when you write something, it stays with you. It's one of the rules of education. It's really good when you're attending a course, you take notes, than if you don't take notes. And then when you take the notes, it's even better if you go back and read the notes you took. But just taking notes, it helps you retain what the message is, because you have to synthesize and distill into little messages what was being spoken in the class. And then you go back and review it. And then even more as you try to explain it to somebody, what you heard in the class. And then it's more deep than just the notes and reviewing your notes. Because you'll understand what you don't understand. Or you have to understand it clearly in order to explain it. So this is our spiritual training and education project of becoming familiar with that which is beyond our experience and residing there just through sound. Really special. Let's see if there's some discussion. What we've been doing these evenings is those who are present can encourage to speak something or ask something or share something. And when that's over, we'll go to the online questions. Anything? Yeah, Hare Krishna. You're on.
So, Gopa Kumar, when he went, we have seven doors, right, in Vaikuntha?
Yes.
Now, between the two doors, how much is the distance?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's, you can lay it out in terms of physical distance. But some distance, but it's not a physical distance. How big are the doors? How wide are is the passage into through the door? I mean, wide enough.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. This is the question about the book Brihat Bhagavatamrita itself.
Okay.
Like, what is the, where is that content from? Like, it is Sanatana Goswami's experience of spiritual world, or he took summary from the Bhagavatam and summarized here. Like, what is the content from?
It's Jaimini Rishi's Kila, which is a supplement to his Mahabharata. Now, I had this discussion with Gopi Pranadana Prabhu, who was the lead translator. And I said something like what you said. There's three possible ways. This is a commentary on the Bhagavatam. And it's expressing through Sanatana Goswami's realization the message of the Bhagavatam. In a very attractive form. That's one picture. And another is that's all it is. It's a historical record of what Narada did and what Gopa Kumar did. And it just mirrors the Mahabharata and eventually the Bhagavatam. So actually there's two. And he said, he also discussed this with other scholars, and it can be taken either way. It's not fiction. He's not interested in fiction. Telling a story in order to get, you know, an uneducated audience like into it. It's not fiction. It's a depiction of what the Bhagavatam says, so in that sense it's a commentary on the Bhagavatam. So it's either or both. Okay.
So you talked about how the next step is going to Ayodhya and then Dwarka Loka, right?
Yeah.
So I was just wondering, what is the, you know, the finer details between going to Ayodhya and Dwarka Loka or Govinda Loka, right? So like, is there a difference in the amount of like pleasure, joy,
yes,
contentment that's going on?
Yes. Yes. The main difference, that's one of the differences, but the main difference is the fullness of opulence in the previous place is there in the subsequent place, and there's the addition of intimacy or madhurya, sweetness in relationships. Like, for example, in Vaikuntha, Narayan doesn't have a mother and father. But in Ayodhya, Ram has a mother and father. In Vaikuntha, Narayan doesn't have brothers. But in Ayodhya, Ram has brothers. There's rasa, or there's intimacy of relationships that are not found in Vaikuntha. So in that way, the opulence is the same in all the places. But the opulence may be more eclipsed by features of intimacy or sweetness. And then similarly, so that the, we're going to hear it tomorrow, but I'll say it now. This verse from Brahma Samhita goes like this. Goloka nami nijadami tade chatasya devi maheshu Hari Dhamasu Teshu Teshu. So it's a hierarchy. Devi Dham, Mahesh Dham, Hari Dham. And Ayodhya, that's Vaikuntha, Hari Dham. And Ayodhya is the topmost region of Hari Dham. And this is now in spiritual hierarchy, not geographic distances or anything. But in intimacy, then Goloka. And in Goloka, there's three primary regions in the spiritual Goloka. And that is Dwarka. This Dwarka is an embassy of that Dwarka, or is a spiritual counterpart of that Dwarka. Mathura, there's the city of Mathura, and it's the counterpart of the spiritual Mathura. And then Vrindavan. So three sections in Goloka, and you know, more intimacy and more intimacy. Where the opulence, Aishwarya feature, is the same. It's sometimes exhibited, sometimes not exhibited. Sometimes, you know, the curtain is drawn back and then the curtain is closed. But that's the main difference. The variety and the intensity of intimacy of love. So much so the residents of Vrindavan, they're not aware of the divinity of Krishna. They just consider him their darling son or their dear friend or their beloved or their master, because Krishna has younger cowherd boys that like to serve him. Priyanarma Sakas, little boys, and they serve Krishna. And they're just happy serving Krishna. And he's reciprocating with their love. So that's the main distinction. It's not a geographic or a physical hierarchy, it's a spiritual intimacy hierarchy. Is that clear?
Yeah.
Okay. Nothing? Okay. Oh. So we have people from all over the world and people of different ages, and some are 9 and 7 and 80 years old. You know, so this is an interesting way of having classes. Go ahead.
This is Visalaksha Prabhu.
Yeah.
Lord Krishna said to Gopakumar that you're not eager to reach or see me, rather neglectful.
Lord Vishnu that said it. Lord Narayan that said it. Go ahead.
In my case, how to develop the genuine eagerness in keeping the Krishna consciousness goal intact?
By hearing and association and service.
And this is Rajesh Kumar Prabhu. This is from his Arnav Pandey. If Gopakumar went to Vaikuntha, then how was he able to come back? Isn't it said that if you go, then you stay there?
Well, you don't come back to material existence, but he was able to travel freely, just like the Vaikuntha agents. They came all the way down and picked up, you know, Ajamil and took him to the spiritual realm, or picked up Dhruva and took him to the Dhruvaloka. They can travel wherever they like. So Dhruva was able to travel here and there, but he didn't come back to material existence, another material body, and so forth. By this time, his body is fully spiritualized.
This is Veda. Do the 7 doors to Vaikuntha signify anything?
Maybe, but I don't know what they... Did you know? Is 7? There's a number... Is it in numerology, is 7 meaningful of something or other? It's just there's 7 gates. I don't know, but there's some meaning behind the 7.
And this is Amara Mataji. We hear that the purpose of Varnashram is self-realization. What is the purpose in spiritual world where everyone is already self-realized?
They don't have anything to achieve, so there isn't a purpose. It's just there are different moods of service, and so they assume different functions of service. We have something to achieve, self-realization. They don't have anything to achieve. They're just serving according to their inclination of pleasing the personality of Godhead. And then it conforms with custom.
And this is Rupavilas Prabhu. I'm trying to understand what is dynamic but not changing.
What is dynamic but not changing?
Yeah.
It's spiritual. Changing, you know, the language has context. So the normal way that we think of changing is immaterial change. And, you know, we're a certain number of days and years old, and that's changing moment to moment. The cells in our body are changing, and, you know, everything material is changing by the influence of time. So that's the normal sense of change. Then this other term is of the spiritual dimension. And when there's material, spiritual dimension, there's no change. It's dynamic. It's not static, it's dynamic. But it's not material change.
And are all Vaikuntha planets fundamentally the same?
Fundamentally. Well, there's variegatedness, for sure. But fundamentally the same. There's the principles and the features of them are the same, but there's variegatedness.
And this is Damodar Vilas Prabhu. It's so much heart-touching to hear the words of the Lord to Gopakumar, that he was so eagerly waiting for Gopakumar.
Hmm.
Is it the same for those also who are not yet pure in devotion?
Yeah. Gopakumar wasn't there already. And he wasn't responding to the efforts of the personality of Godhead. So yeah, it applies to you and me.
And
we're distracted. Go ahead.
This is Radha, Atulya Mataji's daughter. What makes Goloka planet higher than Ayodhya?
Well, his question was similar, the intimacy feature.
This is Stira Mataji. While I am going through the journey of my Krishna consciousness, I make mistakes. I may not be able to serve at times due to my conditioning. How does this impact my overall journey?
It's not a Vedic statement, but it's something that comes to mind. Confucius said, the greatness of a man is not how many times he falls, but that every time he picks himself up. Or, you know, Prabhupada's way of saying that just as the power of locomotion is there within a child, by practicing to walk, eventually can walk, because the power of locomotion is already there. So, falling short and all these other things, you know, less than perfect, it's just part of the becoming perfect is we're not there yet, and you pick yourself up and you continue with faith, adhering to the process and so forth. And so it doesn't impact your progress that you slip. You get up and continue making efforts.
And this is Kirti Prabhu. Gopakumar saw some residents of Vaikuntha resembled demons. I'm not sure if I heard this right. Could you please explain how demons reside in Vaikuntha?
Well, yeah, I meant to read that aloud, but I don't know if I can find it quickly. Okay, here's the commentary. This is text 37. You can look it up. 2437. The residents of Vaikuntha are in fact purely transcendental persons. The substance of their bodies is unalloyed satchit ananda, so these residents never belong to the human or other material species, nor to the limited designations of Varna and Ashram. Still, for the Supreme Lord's pleasure, they may assume or relinquish any form at any time. Some of them therefore appeared before Gopakumar like members of Vedic society, etc. There's no explanation specific about, so the text reads, some appeared as humans, some as monkeys, demigods, demons, the Sanskrit word is daityas, devatas, daityas, and rishayas, sages. So they may be resemblances of something that's of this world, but it's a form somehow, and within their heart of hearts, they wish to be of service to the Supreme Lord in this way, that way, or some other way. And so they appear in that form. They're not demons, they're serving the Lord in this form, that form, the other form. Now, what might be the reason that they might want to assume the form of a demon, I don't know. For the Lord's service of some form or fashion, I don't know.
This is Govinda Mohini Mataji. Just wanted to know how Prabhupada recommended to read books in order, Bhagavad Gita, then Srimad Bhagavatam, then Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Yeah.
Is there a recommendation when one should read these kind of books, Srimad Bhagavatam?
Okay, thank you for asking that question. Normally, I don't go there with, you know, even in my own reading, what to speak of, you know, reading aloud, like, you know, with a number of people in the audience here, virtual audience, but still. Because some persons may think, ooh, nectar, I'm, you know, skip over Prabhupada's Bhaktivedanta purports and go to something that's new and high and, you know, exciting. So, I don't take this reading from Brihad Bhagavatamrita. That means you should like put down your Chaitanya Charitamrita and Srimad Bhagavatam and just go to this. That would be a mistake. So thank you for asking the question. This is the intention was because we're speaking about Vrindavan, Vrindavan, Vrindavan. What's the transcendental hierarchy of Vaikuntha, Ayodhya, Dwaraka, etc.? So these are scriptural references that give us a really interesting picture. Read them later, or say, become very familiar with Bhagavad Gita, the Bhakti Shastris, and then Srimad Bhagavatam, at least, you know, reasonably familiar. Spend lots and lots and lots and lots. And then the interest in reading other literatures doesn't disturb you, doesn't take you away from Prabhupada's lotus feet and his transcendental empowered purports. So much later, please. Okay.
This is V.C. Prabhu. We don't know his name. What does it mean that Vaikuntha can be had in the material world?
What it means is consciousness. I heard Prabhupada say twice in New York, and I heard the Prabhupada made the same statement in Los Angeles. This temple is not in Brooklyn, then later it was Manhattan. This temple is not in New York. This temple is in Vaikuntha. So, and what does that mean? It means all the activities are centered around Krishna. And the singing is for Krishna, the dancing is for Krishna, the cooking is for Krishna, the worship is for Krishna, the talking is for Krishna. Krishna is at the center of all activity. That's Vaikuntha. That's the nature of Vaikuntha. So one can create an atmosphere of Vaikuntha in this realm by service and by sound. We're changing batteries here, so for those of you online, little delay.
This is Mamta Mataji from Naipavu. After hearing today and yesterday, just thinking about impersonalism and how much impersonalists are missing out and being like atheists, question, would there be hope for them?
Well, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pasyatya Desatarini. Srila Prabhupada came to the Western countries to give the message of personalism, in a world that's filled with impersonalism. So that the hope is association with those who are carrying bhakti, and those that are impersonalist can become influenced to become bhakti adherents. Now, it takes a qualified person to do that, but, you know, there's hope. And, you know, progressively, anyone who takes Krishna Prasadam and hears Krishna's holy name, they'll be benefited in any case, you know, preliminary, initial improvement from being impersonalist to becoming purified.
This is Bhakti Priya Mataji. She has three questions. One is, I heard beggars in Vaikuntha when Gopakumar was describing what he saw. Is that possible? Can there be beggars?
Well, same as demons. Same as monkeys. They're assuming a form for some reason. I can't explain the reason they would assume a form of a monkey or a demon or a beggar. But it's not that their profession is they're beggars or they're missing opulence. It's said specifically several times. They have all opulences and they may manifest them, not manifest them at their will.
The second question is, I often find myself suffering from pride. How to overcome this nature or attitude?
We discussed that at length this morning in Palatine in relation to the story of Indra. You know, what is the nature of pride and how to overcome it? And Krishna doesn't like pride. So he'll help us in sometimes ways that, you know, we're like a little overwhelming how he's helping us. But he doesn't like pride. So knowing that Krishna doesn't like pride, that's a big start. Knowing that you don't like pride, that's another big start. And pride-less-ness, we discussed. So I suggest that she listens to the morning discussion. It was very thorough, comprehensive.
The third question is, I'm looking for examples when a devotee should be humble and when a devotee should be, okay, when a devotee should be humble and when a devotee should be greedy for spirituality.
Well, they're not contradictory. Spiritual humility and spiritual greed are not at all contradictory. And one should be humble at all times and one should be spiritually greedy at all times. Spiritual greed, it doesn't sound nice. I mean, the word greed is not a nice word, not a complimentary word. But in the spiritual sense, it's like really strong eagerness for Krishna's mercy. To the point where it's greedy for Krishna's mercy, so it's strong eagerness. So try being eager or enthusiastic.
Can we have some examples on this?
I'm just describing principles. So, you know, an example. You want to worship your deity. So, like, be very, very eager to get up in the morning and do what you need to do to prepare yourself to worship your deity nicely. So that's a kind of spiritual greed.
This is Paramatma Prabhu. Please help me understand, if material world is a perverted reflection of Vaikuntha Lokas, then is it we have cities, towns, families, children, etc. in Vaikuntha? If kids are there, is it something like a devotee becomes a kid for the pleasure of Krishna?
Gosh. Why not? And, you know, I advise you and the other people in the audience here, don't try to stretch your mind to the spiritual world because it doesn't match. You won't go there. And, you know, the inquisitive spirit is fine, But be careful of making comparisons and looking at the spiritual world through the lens of your material experience. Just be careful about that. You know, for that matter, if they have no desire, why are there, marriage and children? Well, it has to do with some service to the Supreme Lord. And it's not with, you know, a mix of material spiritual. It's fully spiritual. So what's that like? You won't understand that with the material lens. That there are persons who have a desire to take this form, that form, the other form, that we can't understand why they would want to have these various forms. But they have that spiritual desire. I can't understand, at least. So, same, children.
This is Taruni Radha Mataji. For Gopakumar, he traveled to Vaikuntha before going to Goloka.
Yes.
But our process assures one direct entrance to Goloka. It's inconceivable. How can one understand this? Also, how can we stay steady on this path with full focus?
Well, we're encouraged to enter into Vraja Prem because that's what Lord Chaitanya's gift is, and everything has been provided to nourish that Vraja Prem. So that's why we are moving in the way that we're moving. And it's not like surpassing this or that or the other thing. It's just moving towards what Lord Chaitanya's gift is, trying to receive his gift. And, you know, how to remain focused? That's a big question. Control the mind. How do you control the mind and senses? So by purification, connecting the mind and connecting the senses to the all-attractive personality of Godhead Krishna by the sadhana bhakti process, purification and through the different stages. You won't become focused, what to speak of, remain focused without following proper sadhana, having a clear sense of the goal of that sadhana. It's not just a mechanical, it's a devotional sadhana. So the short answer is by the process of bhakti, you can remain focused.
There is a follow-up by V.C. Prabhu.
By whom?
We are not able to understand who it is, but the initials V and C is given.
Well, later you ask the V.C. who that is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. So the follow-up is about pride. Is the subtle form of pride feeling that I am okay and not depending on the Lord?
Well, you know that you shouldn't do that, so it doesn't matter whether the label is pride or something else. It's certainly false ego. Pride is very specific. We discussed it this morning, so go back and listen to the recording of this morning class. But pride has to do with something that you have and a feeling that you carry about that something that you have. That's pride. So I think a short answer is no. It's more connected with false ego.
And that was Hari Prabhu from Vizag, now in Boston.
Okay. That's it. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. We're finished.
Martin has a question.
She has a question.
Sorry, I don't know English properly. That's why I'm...
He was asking, like, when Krishna is 1 year or 2 years, is the same Krishna or different Krishna?
Same Krishna.
Yeah, I had Prabhu, Maharaj, Amirendra Das. He one lecture he telling, 1 year boy is done, he left.
It is no.
1 year Krishna is killed. That's
it's pastime. He's not influenced by time. He's giving happiness, variegated happiness, to his loving associates. Not only Nanda and Jasoda, but his various associates. He's giving happiness in varieties of ways to his associates. So there's variegatedness on that basis. It's not he went somewhere and came.